My name is Milana Weintraub. I'm an actress and comedian living in Los Angeles, and I am a refugee.
In the United States, the Soviet Union is finally allowing thousands of Jews to emigrate and leave their lives of religious persecution. But now the United States is blocking their flight to freedom.
Leaving virtually everything behind, they came here to wait for an interview with the Immigration and Naturalization Service. For the Weintraub family, help cannot come too soon.
So people are fleeing because there's a civil war in Syria to dominate the region. It's trapping its citizens in the crossfire between the government, rebels, and extremist groups, all of whom have committed serious war crimes, including use of toxic chemical weapons, torture, and mass attacks on civilians. According to the UN, the death toll is over 250,000, and 12 million people have been displaced. Over 4 million people have fled Syria, and thousands continue to make the trek through Turkey, where they pay about $1,500 to smugglers who put the refugees in small rafts to make the dangerous 6-mile trip across the Aegean Sea to the Greek island of Lesbos every day.
I was supposed to fly home like 4 hours ago, and I'm not gonna do that. I'm getting on a plane to fly to the island of Lesbos, which is really in need of resources and volunteers, all sorts of shit. I mean, I don't really know what I'm gonna do, but I can't do nothing. I don't wanna be a passive citizen anymore. I wanna be a force for good.
My name's Milana. I'm in New York. I'm holding this microphone. I'm giving you face.
Good face.
I'm giving you
fierce that face.
I'm on Zoe Nightingale's You're Welcome, or Free Sex Advice.
We're not really sure what it's called. It's hard to know. So anyway, I've watched you sort of grow. You've been now on Silicon Valley. You've been on Love. You've been on what? What else have you done?
I've been in Love and on Love. I've been in Silicon Valley and on Silicon Valley.
Right.
I'm a comedian. I do improv. I direct commercials and sketches and music videos.
Yes, but I'm guessing it's not like Christina Aguilera, Dirty, where girls no. are like steaming off their face.
They are, but for comedy, only for comedy.
Is it like
comedy.
Sarah McLachlan, where like love is better than ice cream, with like lots of beautiful like light and like little fair bitches like eating each other out and scissoring all day? Or what are we talking about here?
It's comedy. It's really fun.
Can you tell me about your family's story getting here?
Yeah, so when I was 2 years old, my family left Uzbekistan and we moved to America. It was a really long process. It was a year and a half of living in Austria and Italy, and my mom was 22 and my dad was 29, and they didn't speak any language other than Russian. And we were with a lot of other Soviet refugees traveling around, and so you became a family in that way. But eventually we moved to West Hollywood in LA, in another enclave of Russian Jews. And
why did you guys leave in the first place?
It wasn't a great place for Jews in Uzbekistan at that time. And I think there was also the opportunity to leave. So that meant an opportunity to have more work possibilities, better education for me. My dad's sister had moved out to America like 20 years prior. And she would just tell us stories about the things that were available to them. And that seemed something that we could accomplish too, that maybe was
a
source of joy.
But how do you leave? What do? You just save money and then you hop on a boat to
someplace? No, I think it's lots of paperwork and bribing people and trying to be one of the selected few that gets to leave. At that point, the U.S., former USSR, was very welcoming to get the Jews out. That's
right.
Like a really nice way to say it. Like they were like, oh, you guys want to go? Here's the door. Whereas like previously it was very illegal and hard. So then when we got to America, it was a struggle for my parents. They didn't speak the language. Neither of my parents really had an education. My mom had a nursing program and she was able to go to school here and then get a job as a nighttime nurse. My dad delivered donuts and worked as a plumber. And
he knew how to plumb?
Yeah, my dad can do anything with his hands.
That's amazing.
But he's not a word person.
Sure.
And
maybe in Russian he is, though.
In Russian he is. That's the other thing that was really difficult. And eventually why my dad moved back to Moscow. He lives there now. Which is that, like, he's such a people person. He's so much about connection.
Sure.
He's got so many jokes. And so talk about charisma. Like, the guy is... he's the person that's sitting in the center of the circle surrounded by people who are laughing at his jokes.
That's where you get it.
I think that's where I get it. My mom is also very cunning and clever and sweet and flirty. She's got lots of really great attributes too. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's why they were attracted to each other.
Sure.
But yeah, ultimately my dad moved back because it was too hard to be here and start over. And I think it was really hard on his ego to have to deliver donuts when like he's like, he's a businessman. Like, he's a hustler. He's the definition of a hustler. He's got like five projects going on at the same time. And he's always trying to make a better life for himself. And here it just felt so linear with not a lot of opportunity for growth.
Sure.
Without the language, at least. So he moved back to Uzbekistan and started a business there and kind of traveled back and forth until it eventually ruined my parents' marriage.
Ah, fun. Yeah. It lasted through the hard part.
Kind of. I mean, the immigration part?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So your parents come here and you grew up. What did you do the primary, like, sort of your education growing up?
I went to a little private school until third grade.
So they sent you to private school? They were making money.
They were spending all of their money on this school.
Was it just you?
It was just me, and we lived in a little one-bedroom apartment, like, three blocks from the school.
God, that's a lot of guilt, huh? Fuck my life.
I didn't feel guilty because I didn't know anything. Like,
right.
They weren't like, we're doing this for you. Eventually there was a we're staying together for you. And I think that was hard. I was like, well, just stop being together.
Like, did they want you to be like a doctor? What would have been like the upper echelon of success for you in their eyes?
Probably if I would have married rich.
Oh, how's that going for you?
Yeah, not good. I'm just going to work on being rich myself.
Yes, high five.
And then not
so
really
good.
Care so much about.
They must be so proud of you.
They are. My mom is so proud of me. She left me a really sweet message. Do you want to hear
it? Yeah, I want to hear it.
Yeah, okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
This is the sweetest.
I'm ready. Put it up. I'll take it.
Hi. I just want to let you know, я хочу тебе сказать, thank you. Thank you for making me feel the way I feel. Thank you for making me feel so proud of you. I love you, and I guess you are my biggest achievement in this life. Thank you. Bye.
Oh, I love it. Moms are so good. Did you just cry and cry and cry?
I couldn't even handle it.
Through this. Did you ever feel like you were ostracized or weird or something or anything?
No, because all of my friends were immigrants.
Everyone?
I think everybody in my class up until third grade, all of those kids except for one girl, they were all Russian immigrants.
It's incredible. I feel like Americans forget. I never forget because I come from immigrants. Such a big part of our American culture was them trying to fit in, us trying to fit in, us trying to succeed, us trying to make them proud, us trying all of this stuff, or being a good example of the Jewish community, of a whatever it was. But like, I feel like everyone forgets that this country is founded as a fucking melting pot of every single person in the world. And like, the xenophobia and the fear and the ostracization of people that is coming around and Trump being, being nominated.
All of that
it's so confusing to me. Don't people remember? Like,
no, I think people forget. I feel like they're lucky enough to be able to forget how privileged they are.
Right, of course. Third generation.
To not have to think about like the pain that your previous generations had to go through to get here to make sure that you can buy your IHOP.
I just don't know.
I've said Applebee's.
Applebee's is better.
Because after all, IHOP is the international house.
That's
it's not really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Applebee's is good because it's got fried green beans with ranch, which feels like the most American
thing.
Which feels like the most American thing.
Yeah, did you ever? I never even ate green beans growing up. I never ate anything that was American. That's
what we do you were mean? So. You just ate borscht and fucking like cabbage soup.
Yeah,
and
we would get food at the Russian deli.
Lettuce wrapped around meat.
Yes. Ugh. They're called galupci.
Can you say it in a hotter way, like if you're in the bedroom?
Galupci.
Oh my god. In fact, can you think of like the most weird Russian sentence to say in a really sexy voice about food?
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. Надо было борщ подогреть.
God.
How's that?
So good, especially with your eyes looking up at me like that.
Yeah.
You've got those bedroom eyes. Like, even if we're in the daytime, it's like we're in a bed somewhere and there's like you know, some kind of sexy Marvin Gaye playing, and we've got glasses of red wine, there's a fire, and there's like a bearskin rug, and we're just like slowly stroking each other's egos over the fire.
We're not touching each other.
No,
we're just complimenting each other.
I love that.
That's what I want to do. I want to lay by a fire and say nice things to you.
I'm telling you, it seems really nice to me.
So,
you, I want to know about what you're doing. I want people to help you. I want people to know what's happening. I want people to have up-to-date information. So how did you find out?
So I was in Greece on vacation, and I was flipping through the channels, as you do when you go to a beautiful foreign country,
as
you
one does,
stay in your hotel room and watch TV
and order room service.
And I noticed that all of the international channels, except for all the channels except for CNN, were talking about the refugee crisis because it was huge. There were thousands of people coming into Greece a day.
Right.
Just this one tiny island called Lesbos, there were 2,000 to 3,000 people coming in. And they were coming in through Turkey. So they could walk from Syria to Turkey. And then from Turkey, they would take a little boat to Lesbos. And people in America were not really talking about it. They were talking about Donald Trump and the Emmys. And it was insane to me. And I realized how ignorant I was and why.
Yeah.
And it's just because, like, everywhere else in the world talks about everywhere else in the world, and we talk about us. I saw a couple things that made me feel like I needed to get involved. One was I saw a video of this girl who was about our age, probably younger. She was in Macedonia, and she was passing out sandwiches to people who were about to get on this train, and she was giving them directions. And I was like, this bitch is so cool. I want to be her friend. Then I was in Athens, which was the last stop. I had done a couple islands. And I was in Athens, and I heard about this like refugee welcoming event on Facebook. I was just looking up events that were facilitating refugees in Athens. They had this meeting there, and there I met young British and French volunteers who had moved to Greece to work for this charity. And they all had jobs that were like online so they could do it. And I was like, I just so looked up to them. I thought that what they were doing was so important and good and cool. And then I went to Lesbos. In Lesbos, there are thousands of people coming in a day. It's this tiny island. It's like you can drive around the whole island in like 3-4 hours. And it's a beautiful Greek island. It's a paradise. It's like the stuff that was written about in mythology. And then there are also thousands of life jackets and raft debris all over the shores and people sleeping on the sidewalks by a beautiful harbor. You know, it's the colliding of two very different worlds. And so people come in there, they get their paperwork, they spend a night or two until they can get onto a boat to go to Athens, and then through Athens they make their way to Europe. And I felt like I needed to go. I knew that a way for me to be more powerful than just like my physical body being there for a week was to make a video about it. I felt like that's my skill. That's what I could offer the world.
Mm-hmm. I saw your video. It was really powerful. It was really, really well done.
So basically what I did, I cut together this little video and I was showing it to my friend Kaylee, and she's like, people are going to want to help. You should give them an opportunity to do that. So I made this website called can'tdonothing.org, and it's a place for people to find out about opportunities to share their time or their money or their voice. And all of the organizations on there are very small and hands-on, and most of them are volunteer-run.
When you were there, I mean, because you went there, you volunteered, what was it like? I mean, because people can, like, hear about it, we see about it, we think about it, but, like, you don't really understand, like, the feeling of watching people go through this. And what was it like for you?
You know, I didn't really have time to be sad. I think I got sad when I got home, and maybe on my last day there. But before that, I was so grateful to be able to contribute. There were these two young girls. I remember they were 22 and they were traveling together. And it felt like they were girls you would meet at a hostel. But they had nothing. And they were trying to get to freedom. Like, I wonder where they are right now. Can I talk about something really fucked up? We went around one of the days that we were there. And so there's lots of urban refugees. Like 80% of the refugees don't live in the camps. So they tried to get jobs and find other ways to live, which means that a lot of them are living in poverty because they don't have the right to work. So they do it under the table and they take jobs that the Jordanians won't take. One guy we met was a professional musician in Syria, and his job in Jordan was working at the quarry where he would break rocks. And if you can imagine leaving your home because there's trouble here and you're thinking, okay, like, we'll give it a month, 2 months, things will calm down, and then we'll come back. And then it's 5 years. and you've got kids and you have no ability to work and you have no sense of self and all of the human needs that we have besides just surviving, that's not all we need to survive. You know, the food and the water and the shelter is not enough. I've never seen somebody look so desperate. This guy's eyes were red and he was kind of embarrassed that we were there giving him food, and he was sad for his children. And it was the first time that I really understood why somebody would join a terrible terrorist organization. If you have nothing and you feel like the world has spit on you and you already don't want to live, but you've got these kids, and somebody says to you, we'll give you $1,000 a month, which is way more than you can make doing anything else. Sure. You just have to come fight with us. And if anything happens to you, we'll take care of your kids. Okay? Now all you have to do is strap this bomb to you and walk into that building. I get it. It's not right. It's not good, but I get it.
Yeah.
And then also there's like the afterlife stuff, which is
72 virgins. Doesn't sound so bad.
I don't know what the fuck you can do with 72 virgins.
I don't even know what to do with one virgin, honestly. Like, they don't know what they're doing. I don't like fucking.
Have you fucked a virgin?
Well, only my first boyfriend.
I've never slept with a virgin.
Virgins are terrible in bed.
Hey, if virgins are listening, good luck. The first time's tough.
So when you were there, did you feel like there was help and there was hope at all, or did you feel pretty hopeless?
I felt like there was help and hope. I thought that there were a lot of really wonderful people there putting everything they can into it, and it still wasn't enough.
Right.
That was the hope, and that was also the hopeless part. I think there were some really cool places doing a lot of good stuff. The goal for me in my dream fantasy world would be to figure out how to make it so that they can go back home. That's what they want.
How is that possible?
I don't know. So many people say, like, we don't want them here. Why are they trying to enter our country? Like, they don't fucking want to be anywhere but Syria. They love their place. It's like the way that you feel about Judaism, or like, it's like how you feel about your ancestry and your hometown. It's such a deeply ingrained part of who they are. They are Syrian people, and they are proud of it. And they are mourning the loss of their home in addition to their jobs and friends and
language and life and culture. Food and culture and music.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think volunteering, I think also awareness, like all of this bullshit fear stuff that we hear about Muslim Americans and how they're all ISIS, and love is the answer, man. Like, if that father who had the two children was approached by ISIS, it could go one way. But if he was treated with love and respect and felt welcome and like there was a reason for him to keep fighting the good fight, then he could go a totally different way. And I think part of what ISIS is doing is making it so that people are turning against Muslims. I think that's part of their goal. And then out of desperation, more Muslim men have to join ISIS.
Right.
But it's not absolute. Like, we could heal the world with love. Do I sound like Michael Jackson yet?
No.
I feel like it's true. And so, like, maybe one of the things you could do is talk to someone in your neighborhood who's different than you and ask them about what they think about it. Like, create conversation, make people feel welcome, and also like spread the word, read the articles, watch the videos, talk about it. Like, that is what your social media is for. It's not for changing your profile pic. I really want to be active. That's one step. And if that makes you feel like you're doing something and calms the part of you,
worthless.
Exactly. I think it does make people feel like they're active, and then
people
that's
are
dangerous.
Sheep. They just want to look like they fit into whatever is, like, you know, of the moment and is, like, culturally, like,
you know, relevant. So they look like they're like reading the news. Nobody gives a fuck.
I really miss being stupid. I really miss not so long ago not caring about current events.
Sure.
That was
mucking
fun.
Around with your friends and laughing.
And just thinking about myself, just like being this ego driven bullshit vanity queen, like just worrying about my outfits and is this vintage enough for me? Like,
is that how you see yourself? A vanity, like a.
I think at one point all I cared about was how cool I was.
Sure.
And I miss that. That's like such a luxury to have that be your biggest problem.
It's a luxury to be so vain.
Yeah.
Right. Sure.
If you don't have anything else to think about, then great. No, like that's a good.
You are lucky. You are the proverbial man in the shackles and the shadows who's seen the light, and now you can never go back.
Yeah,
I'm very grateful to hear these things because I know that a lot of people that listen to me and myself included, just you never just know where to start, and a lot of people want that little bit of a start.
Yeah. Can'tDoNothing.org. Yeah. Start there.
Got it.
I think that what you're doing is really good for the world, too. I think you found out a way to use your skills and talents to make people feel safe talking about things that they might previously feel ashamed to talk
about.
Sure.
People who go through strife and struggle, people who have had like life experiences, they just have better stories. They just have more to say. They just have a bigger heart to share.
I've said that before, that I feel like if you've had an easy childhood, it's harder for me to be friends with you.
Bring me your weak, your poor, your fucked up.
Well, I feel like if you're fucked up, you've had to overcome something that has made you better.
Fact. Tell people who you're voting for.
I'm voting for Hillary Clinton.
Why is that?
I think that she's done a really good job doing something that used to be considered a man's job.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other option?
Well, Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah. There is no other option. Like, Donald Trump is not an option. In fact, it's an embarrassment to this country that he's even a candidate.
It is quite... talk about a mirror. Talk about a mirror.
Right. That's one of the most astonishing things, is that we talk about awareness and spiritual evolution and our connection to the planet, and there are so many people who are experiencing that. And because it's such a big part of my world, my friends, my interaction with the population, it is even more surprising to me that there are enough people to get this person elected. How can we have that and then also him as a candidate?
I don't know. It's really upsetting. But I think maybe it is he is a creation of our own making. We have, with our complacency and with our xenophobia and with our hatred and with our incredible racism that we sweep under the rug. Like, we think we're not racist anymore. We think that we're accepting that we're like this like super functional, highly, integrated, cognitive society. We are not. We are basically we're like ruffians who are like trying to protect. It's this whole me society, this I society. It's how can I get the most stuff? How can I acquire the most things? How can I protect it in my own little world? And how can I share the least as possible?
But also, why am I still miserable?
Yeah, right. Why isn't all this stuff making me happy?
It's not working.
Yeah.
All of the things that the commercials tell me are going to work aren't working.
So, improv, let's go. Most embarrassing place you've gotten waxed?
Like on my body or location?
Doesn't matter.
I used to go to this woman named Sofa. She's this Russian lady who did it in her bedroom.
At least you can talk to her. I never know how to talk to my Russian waxers.
Oh, yeah. She asked me about my family.
This is very hairy. Why have you waited so long to see me?
Yeah, she always knew when I shaved and she was very upset about it.
You are in a relationship. Dustin Hoffman took you to dinner and wine and dined you, and then did different impersonations of his different like favorite roles. You don't think you'd go down on him?
No. I saw him in a parking lot one time and I took a selfie of us, and he's like, oh darling, you have to hold the phone higher.
Oh my god, you got selfie lessons from Dustin Hoffman?
Aren't I lucky?
Isn't he 70?
He's very old, but he's very charming. Are you serious that you would go down on him?
I'm not serious. I'm not sure. It depends. It depends on how charming he is. You say he's very charming. I trust you.
Yeah, I am not attracted to him.
Okay, fine. What old celebrity's dick would you suck if you weren't in a loving relationship?
Oh, just thinking about an old dick.
Okay, fine. Really, what about John Travolta in Grease?
Yeah.
Okay, what about...
Yes, okay, so old people when they were young does it for me.
No,
Harrison Ford, maybe.
Harrison Ford, for sure. What about Robert Redford now? Come on.
He's almost cooler now.
out of Africa the way we were, white suit. You wouldn't go down on him even though he's 95 years old and probably has a stutter and a tremor.
I probably wouldn't.
You are fucking lying to me. Robert Redford.
I'm really turned off by like when you could see veins through skin.
Like especially their dick veins.
Their dick veins, yeah.
How about Richard Gere? Richard Gere 20 years ago, not Richard.
I really like Richard Gere as a person. I think I would.
You'd go down Richard Gere?
But because I like him as a person. Oh, God, I'm such a prude.
That's really boring.
I hear myself, and I'm apologizing to my subconscious.
Okay. How about Devon Sawa?
Yes.
Casper.
That was Ryder my first Strong. Big crush. I hung up posters of him.
You didn't.
Yeah, from Bebop magazine.
I did High Tiger Beat. It was Tiger Beat, first of all. And
there was more than one, and maybe you did Tiger Beat, but I did Bebop.
I prayed to God. Actually, that Justin Taylor Thomas would take me to my seventh grade dance.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas never did it for me. Everybody had a crush on him, and I was a Devon Sawa 24/7.
Okay, how about Ryder Strong in Boy Meets World?
Yes.
Zach Morris.
Didn't really do it for me.
Come
I don't like.
On.
I don't. No, Devon Sawa was the only blonde I ever had feelings for.
I love Devon Sawa so much. I love the gap between his teeth. Do you remember him in Now and Then?
Yes.
Oh my God, when she was binding great. Her breasts and she was trying to not.
But when he was Casper and they danced together. I think that was maybe my first like feeling down there.
Oh, no way.
I think that was my first like I need to go be alone and figure out.
Did you jerk off to Devon Sawa?
Probably. Yes, I did.
That's so embarrassing.
But I was a child.
It's fine. It's totally fine. I forgive you. It's totally cool.
I don't feel ashamed of it.
Okay, good. We're not talking about this now. We're talking about the first time you saw Syrian refugee crisis.
No, stuff. We're talking about Devon Sawa and touching myself.
Listen, I jerked off to Jonathan Taylor Thomas about 12 times, maybe more. I'm not joking. And Danny Zuko, and even a gay character from Silk Queen of the Desert.
Do you want to have kids?
Mm-hmm. How do you think they're going to, what kind of world do you think they're going to grow up in?
I don't know. I feel still, I mean, despite it all, I feel like the world is good. I feel like there's a lot of love. I have a lot of love to give my future children, even if I don't birth them. And I really, I have faith in souls. I am pretty spiritual, and I just think that everything evolves for the highest good somehow.
All right, well, from Chelsea with double F's, we're not sure, double Z's?
I'm a mystery.
Milana, I want to thank you so much for sharing your mind and your soul and your work and your hope and your beauty and your mammary glands and your love of humanity and your positive fucking mental attitude in it. Truly makes my heart warmer, because if there's enough of you out there, maybe we can turn this fucking cesspool around and have a world that's full of people who have an authentic heart.
I doubt it.
You dick, we were doing so good.
We got something we both know that we don't talk too much about it. Ain't no real big secret, all the same, somehow we get around it.
I met the amazing Milana about 7 years ago, where I believe I was wearing a clown nose on a pirate ghost ship. She was just as beautiful then as she is now. Sometimes it's truly hard to believe how beautiful she is inside and out, but it's true. I've seen it. I want to thank her for sharing her story with us. You can find everything you need to get off your ass and shut off Netflix and lend your voice and your money and your time to the people who need them at www.can'tdonothing.org. I would also highly recommend following all of Milana's antics on Twitter at Mint Milana. And if you need a good laugh, type in her name into YouTube and watch all of her videos. It's truly, truly something exceptional. I really, really love this girl. Also, you can follow me on my Snapchat at DJ Killin' It. Don't forget, there's no G. On Instagram at Dr. Z Nightingale. And of course, on Twitter at Genuinely False. I do live Periscope interviews from there. I really truly wish that I had made all my handles the same. What was I fucking thinking? I am at home. I'm quite under the weather. I'm feeling extra medium. So please excuse my wobbly voice and send healing thoughts my way. And I, in turn, will send you endless hugs from across the airwaves from a very comfy bed in Brooklyn.